I'm David Boeri. This is Radio Boston. Scholars tell us that the first person to drop an R was an Englishman in the middle of the 15th century. So you can't blame my relatives. My family didn't start speaking English until a couple of generations ago, and we picked it up from the natives. Growing up north of Boston, my brother and sisters and I was comfortable speaking the local tongue as a cob of corn beside a tail of lobster with drawn butter. When some kids from Texas moved into our neighborhood, we laughed ourselves silly. We thought everyone was supposed to sound like us. Trouble came when I went to college, a small Ivy League school where people's first and last names were interchangeable. Walking across the street one day, I warned my classmate, "Look out for the car!" He had no idea what I was talking about. The car missed him, but I got hit with months of abuse from my classmates because my alphabet was one letter short of 26. By the next summer, when I met up with my friends back home, I was showing off my letter sweater. The letter was R. I put it in everything. My friends weren't impressed. Drinking a can of beer at the corner, my best friend Billy looked at me and delivered the group's consensus. He said, "You're weird." Looking for the inner R in the accents of our lives. Coming up on Radio Boston.
Government Center.
Welcome to Fenway Park, America's most beloved ballpark.
93 northbound's a really tough ride, especially the further north you go.
Welcome to the Old North
On
Church.
The left side of the trolley, 1837, the Boston Public Cod.
Each week on Radio Boston, we bring you stories of Boston and beyond. This week, we bring you what's already been here for centuries. You've heard it. You've had to learn to understand it. And maybe you even speak it. Outside the area, it's called the Boston accent. But here, in one of the most turf-conscious areas of the country, you can find an accent for Medford, one for Revere, another for Southie and Dorchester, and one for Beacon Hill. Then there's the sound of the Kennedys. How did this all come to pass? We start our story in Medford.
So what do you want to know about the city?
I've come to South Medford in John DeVito's busy barbershop in search of something more than a haircut. I'm looking for a fundamental principle of English pronunciation. It's called roticity. And right off the bat, John DeVito, razor in hand, wants to set something straight. No one in Medford says Medford.
But we don't say that.
What do you say?
Medford.
Medford.
And I should also know that South Medford is not what most people think it is.
They make a face and everything like, "What, did I just murder you? What happened? You live in South Medford?" "No, I didn't murder anybody." Yeah, they'll say, they'll run around and they'll say,
"I live in West Medford."
"Oh, what do you want, a fantasy? Medford's Medford."
And don't get it confused with Tufts University either, which is just a few streets away.
To us, the people from South Medford, it is. You know, it's right there, but it's its own
entity. We don't go up there, and they don't come down here.
Later, we play this very line from Boston College linguistics professor M.J. Connelly.
It's right there, but it's its own
entity. We don't go up there, and they don't come down here.
Sounds like Mr. Griffin.
Yeah.
But
so what do you hear there?
I hear also something in the Northwest. Yeah.
Northwest.
Medford, Everett, maybe Charlestown.
What Connolly doesn't hear is an R at the end of the word. Theya, here.
The absence, the non-rhotic effect, is considered to be one of the characteristics of a lot of Northeastern American English.
If you have a Boston accent, says Professor Connolly, you belong to the non-rhotic party of English speakers. That means you drop R's when you're supposed to pronounce them, and you pronounce them where they don't belong.
Someone who makes cubes is a Cuba. But the island is Cuber.
Professor Connolly says the Boston accent can be divided into several subgroups. There's Medford, then there's the North End and East Boston accent, both of them with an overlay of Italian it from immigrants, and there's the Southie and Dorchester accent with its overlay of Irish.
The Southie accent, of course, you can get plenty of examples of, right? And that's probably closest to what I grew up hearing in the rest. You'd have to have a phrase or something like that. What do you think I am?
Over at Frosty Village in Southie, I ordered a Kelly special, steak and cheese.
My name's Lane Donnelly. I work at Frosty Village. And I don't park my car in a garage.
Lane Donnelly said it was not going to be easy for me to find that Southie accent. Not now.
It's not Southie people here anymore, though.
It's all yuppies now.
She suggested that if I wanted to find what remains of that accent, I should go down to the senior center for bingo on H Street, or as Donnelly says it.
On H Street there?
Yeah.
H, of course, is the mark of Irish immigrants, which explains another accent unto itself, according to Connolly. This one came when the upwardly mobile Irish family called the Kennedys aspired to reach the top of the social ladder.
They're unmistakably Boston. You wouldn't, probably wouldn't put them anywhere else in the world. But they're neither fish nor fowl as far as the areas go.
Connolly says John F. Kennedy spoke with hypercorrection, inserting R's into Cuba and Africa. Even non-academics like Medford resident Bob Holland says that's weird.
When I go to another part of the country, people say, how come you don't talk like the Kennedys? I say, that's because nobody talks like the Kennedys.
Except the Kennedys, who wanted to be like the Cabots and Lodges and Saltonstalls, those old Yankee families who are at the top of the social pecking order. They spoke what Connolly calls the primal Boston accent, the Brahmin accent.
I don't know where Jack's R came from. I can tell you he was a very charming human being and a friend, as well as an Irish Yankee.
John Sears is sitting in the first floor parlor of his four-story townhouse on Beacon Hill. The former state representative, city councilor, Suffolk sheriff, and Republican candidate for governor is surrounded by books. They include volumes by Edmund Burke and Gibbon's History of the Roman Empire, both written more than a century after Sears' ancestors had come to America.
I talk like my dad, and he talked like his dad, and I'm afraid some of us just haven't escaped that whatever little farming part of England we came from.
That first Sears came in 1633, and those English progenitors, Professor Connolly says, founded the colony of the Boston accent.
You know, if you were looking for an immediate origin, you'd probably find it in Lincolnshire English.
So the ancestors of John Sears brought the accent that formed the basis of what followed. And you can understand why Sears might seem a little miffed that the Kennedys, instead of his ancestors, should be equated with the Boston accent.
When we don't sound like that, then someone says, well, you don't sound like a Bostonian, which is a little hurtful if you've lived here for several hundred years.
On Beacon Hill, that's the charming John Sears, who knew the Lodges and the Cabots, the Saltonstalls and the Lowells, and the Kennedys, who sounded and still sound like no one else. Listeners, who do you sound like? We're talking this hour about accents, or is it dialects? We can't agree, and the linguists can't either. You can join our live web chat today on RadioBoston.org. Awaiting you there is Naomi Nagy, the chair of the Linguistics Department at the University of New Hampshire. She's put the Boston accent under the microscope and also studied its effects up north. You can also join the Radio Boston conversation by calling 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or send an email to radioboston@wbur.org. With me in the studio is Rebecca Magoor. She's the director of the program in speaking and learning at Harvard University. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
And here with us from WFCR Studios in Amherst is UMass Amherst linguistics professor John McCarthy, who also has the distinction of having grown up in Medford. Welcome, Professor McCarthy.
Hiya.
Briefly, map the state's accent zones out for us, if you will. Professor McCarthy, starting with that east-west divide and then integrated
okay.
Boston.
All right, so the biggest divide in Massachusetts is the Connecticut River, right out where I am near in Amherst. The Connecticut was historically a major boundary for people who came into this country through Boston. Others came in through New Haven and went up the river. So the big dialect split in Massachusetts is the Connecticut River. East of the Connecticut, you find typical features that we called part of the Boston accent. You find more R dropping. Very little west of the Connecticut, you find words like frap, and you find some other features that we'll be talking about, such as the pronunciation of the words C-O-T and C-A-U-G-H-T.
So drive us into greater Boston.
Okay. So as we move further and further east from, say, Amherst, driving down the Mass Pike or Route 2, what we find is that the features that we associate with the Boston dialect become more and more common. More and more people are using them. People of all different social classes are using them. People from different backgrounds are using them more and more. when we get to, so as we get closer and closer to the Boston area and to the city of Boston, more and more we're going to hear R dropping. We'll also start to hear R intrusion, the added R, and when Kennedy said Cuba in recent days, the added R before a vowel. And we'll also start then at that point to begin to notice for some people, especially older ones, the broad ah in words like bath and lost and love.
Mm. Rebecca Magor, how would you identify the Boston accent?
Well, there's different regions with just within Boston, so you're going to find different sounds within the different neighborhoods. So I've worked with listening to dialects in East Cambridge, in Somerville, and in South Boston, and also in places like Burlington.
Wow, so you put them even into a smaller unit. That's interesting. With me in the studio, Rebecca Magor, research fellow and voice and speech specialist. I should say that she is the director of the program in speaking and learning at Harvard University. Also, UMass Amherst linguistics professor John McCarthy. And moderating our web chat, University of New Hampshire linguist Naomi Nagy. Ask the professor a question in the chat room at radioboston.org. Listeners, join the Radio Boston conversation by calling 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking this hour about how we talk. Let's listen to part of a song by Tim Sawyer of Cambridge. The song is titled Ain't No R in Massachusetts. Also, let's hear some of the accents we collected from the streets of Boston.
You're listening to Radio Boston.
You're listening to Radio Boston on WBUR.
You're listening to Radio Boston with David Boeri on WBUR.
This is Radio Boston on WBUR.
Boston's NPR news station.
Stay with us. There's more after a break.
Overseas, he'd go into the taverns with his big black dog named Q, who was trained to bite the buttocks of the redcoats drinking brew, because there are saints welcome in the common. No R in Massachusetts, founding fathers, may God bless. When they came to this new land, found nothing twixt the Q and S. From New York State to Buzzards Bay, the Commonwealth has none. Even Beacon Hill Society has not a single one. Cause you're our saint, welcome. You're our saint, welcome. You're our saint, welcome in the Commonwealth.
This is Radio Boston. I'm David Boeri. Today we're talking about the accent of Greater Boston, its variations, its origins, and whether it's here to stay. Popularized by the presidency of John F. Kennedy, who led us through that crisis over Cuba, and more recently by Hollywood movies about Southie, the Boston accent is our national trademark. We even make fun of it ourselves. And we're going to hear from the legendary Boston radio character, Richie from Revia.
Yo. Hey, everybody. How you doing? Is this on? I think it's on. Well, I don't care, okay, personally. But anyway, y'all listening to Radio Boston on WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. This is Richie Ridden, and I approve of this message, right?
That's Billy West, the voice of Richie from Revere, who will join us a little later. Listeners, what's the accent of your life? Do you consider it a joy or an affliction? And do you have more than one? Give us a call and let us listen at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With me in the studio today is Rebecca Magor of Harvard University, an associate editor for the International Dialectics of English Archive. And UMass Amherst linguistics professor John McCarthy is with us as well. And you can go to our live web chat. Give us your favorite expressions delivered in the local accent. To get to the web chat, go to our website, radioboston.org. Our moderator there is Naomi Nagy, head of the linguistics department at the University of New Hampshire. Professor McCarthy, we talked earlier about the different accents you can hear in Boston and really in eastern Massachusetts. Explain why there are variations in that Boston accent according to different neighborhoods and towns.
Okay. Well, one major source of variation in the Boston area is this Brahmin dialect. That's the dialect spoken on Beacon Hill and by a small number of people, the old families of Boston, the Lowells, Cabots. John Sears was your example in your lead-in. And that's been with us for a very long time, but has a dwindling number of people. Now, the more close into the urban area than the suburbs where I grew up, places like Dorchester, South Boston, Charlestown, you're going to find more of these features, especially the broad ah. The broad ah, when I ask my students about this, the broad ah is clearly surviving better in Boston proper and the and South Boston and Dorchester than it is even in nearby suburbs like Medford. So very, very few students now will own up to having the broad ah, and even in words like Bath, unless they're from the Boston area.
Well, let's go to someone calling from Boston now. Carrie, you're welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi there.
Where'd you grow up? What's your accent?
I grew up in the good old town of Northampton, Massachusetts, in Western Mass. But I just wanted to make a point that even growing up in Western Massachusetts, we had that hint of an accent, although I was always proud to say that we didn't. But when I went to college in Eastern Massachusetts, I'd run into people from all over the country, and they'd always say, oh, God, you got to be from Boston. Listen to your accent. And I'd say, no, we're from Western Mass. We don't have one.
Rebecca McGore, thanks for the call. Rebecca McGore, it's interesting. People are very, this is a very emotional subject for a lot of people. When you say you have an accent, a lot of people get upset about that.
Yes, they do, because it reflects where they come from. It also, in many cases, will reflect their level of education, supposedly. And so there's a lot of people you find who use terms like, I want to get rid of my accent.
Let's go to Kendra, calling from Marblehead. Kendra, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
And what's your accent?
I really don't have one. I was born and raised north of the city, and whenever I went to, when I went to school in upstate New York, they were all like, you're from Boston, where's your accent? Why don't you have an accent? And our family really made it a point to not have that Boston accent.
You grew up here, and you added a lot of R's.
Yes. Yes,
stand by, Kendra. We're going to put you to the jurors. Rebecca, do you detect a Boston accent there?
It's very slight, but this might be a good time to actually talk about the difference between how you're using the term accent and what I would actually call a dialect.
Yeah, nobody can agree on that one.
In the voice and speech world, and it would be nice to ask Professor McCarthy his opinion on this too, we would actually call all of these things a dialect because these people are native speakers of English.
Professor McCarthy, are you a dialect guy or are you an accent guy?
Dialect is the term that linguists normally use, also because accent only refers to pronunciation, and dialects differ not only in pronunciation, but they can differ in grammar and things like that as well. They're not limited to pronunciation.
Professor McCarthy, Kendra, what do you think, yes or no?
Kendra, I could not detect any Eastern Mass
features. She's
going to
be thrilled with that. You flattered her. Kendra, thanks for the phone call. I'm fascinated by all the dynamics that influence people's accents. Part of it is where you live. Part of it seems to be where you go. Consider the case of three men from Medford, two of them famous now. We start with a third.
You're looking hale and hearty.
Hi, buddy. How you doing? Come in.
Good to see you.
The last time you were here, that house wasn't here. I built that, bought a barn up in Nova Scotia.
I've just arrived in Barnstable, and I feel like I could be back in old New England. It's not just the barn. It's the accent of Alex Theroux, poet, writer, literary critic, professor, and native son of Medford.
I started teaching at Harvard in 73, came up from Virginia.
He picked up his PhD there, but didn't drop his accent. Alex has three brothers who are all writers, the most famous being his brother, the commercially successful travel writer, Paul Theroux. Listen to him talking to TV host Charlie Rose 10 years ago.
Do you really want to write the book that the book reviewer wants you to write? I mean, who are these people? Who are they? On the make, perfidious journalists on the whole who are envious of a writer's reputation. That's all reviewers are.
Paul lost his kind of Medford or regional accent, I think, in the early 60s.
Was it adaptation or affectation or aspiration? For his part, Alex has never left the sound of his childhood.
I never really did lose my Medford accent, working class accent.
Why didn't you?
I never worked at it, I think, is one thing I could say. I never really had a reason to care, seriously.
That's not quite true. Alex remembers times like this one when he would attend various literary parties and would be asked about his accent.
A woman said to me, I know where you're from. I said, oh, can you tell by my Boston accent? And she said, Alex, that's not a Boston accent. That's a Medford accent. And that was a Brahmin telling me, stay down there, Twinkie man.
Like his hometown, Alex is totally accessible. Brilliantly funny, pyrotechnic, and satirical, he's just published his first novel in 20 years.
It's called Laura Warholic, W-A-I-H-O-L-I-C.
And his writing delights in the sounds of that accent close to his own.
Hawaii, people yelled. Give me a coffee regular. Hey, Eddie, where's my platter? Over here. I'll have a lobster omelet.
Also growing up in Medford the same time as Alex was Michael Bloomberg, an Eagle Scout just like Paul Theroux. When you hear the mayor of New York today, you can still hear the flat regionalism of his Boston accent, though much of Medford has been rinsed out, thinks Alex.
I want New Yorkers to have the same opportunity my father wanted for my sister and me, the opportunity to pursue one's dreams.
Bloomberg may have lost much of that accent. Paul Theroux seems to have lost all of it. But sometimes it seems like Alex has never left. He remembers the annual reading of The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere on Patriots Day in front of Gaffey's funeral home in Medford. One year, Bloomberg was the student reader.
And Bloomberg actually read The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere with the kids yelling, "There he is! He's on his horse!" And by the way, you know, we used to always say, "He's drunk! He's had a few! He's going to fall off his horse!"
That's Alex Theroux talking about the red-letter days of a Medford man who became a billionaire and became mayor of New York. One of our listeners has emailed us, Rebecca, saying that that dropped R is really a sign of lack of education. You pointed to that earlier. Let me ask you as well, Professor McCarthy, is it the sign of a lack of education, Alex notwithstanding?
I don't think it is at all, because clearly, as we see, there's many people who choose not to adjust their accent to keep that dropped R, and they're very educated, they're very literary people. So it also has to do with identity, with how you see yourself, with if you would like to continue to see yourself as belonging to a certain area, to a certain neighborhood.
What about the role of class, Professor McCarthy? How much of that dictates this?
Well, Rebecca's exactly right, that how comfortable you are in your skin will determine how you talk to a big extent. If you're happy with the area where you live, happy with the class you belong to, then you won't change your speech. But if you aren't happy with it, if you want to accommodate, adapt, if you're kind of like Leonard Zelig, the human chameleon, you're going to change in some important way. Mm. Now, class is a big factor in this because the prestige dialect in any country is often the dialect associated with the people of the upper class, the people with the money.
Professor and McCarthy, let me interrupt you for a moment. Maybe
sure.
You're getting that direction. You have some evidence, you say, of when that dropped R actually began in Massachusetts.
Oh, sure. So, for example, one thing we know is that Ben Franklin, who was born in Boston and grew up in Boston, he was born around 1700. Around 1750, he wrote an article about how to change English spelling. And he tells us in detail how he pronounced English. And it's clear he wasn't an R dropper. So in 1750, people weren't dropping R's in Boston. When we come to around 1800, Noah Webster, making his dictionary, is warning people against dropping R's, which means it must have been starting then, but had not yet become the standard in the Boston area. But by the time we get to, say, Oliver Wendell Holmes or James Russell Lowell in the 1840s, R dropping is just the standard way of talking in the Boston area. Mm-hmm. And in fact, became the standard for American speech up until World War II.
So, Rebecca, there is a standard. Now, you were telling me earlier you actually coach people into reducing their accent. So those people are upwardly mobile, and this is a challenge for them. Is there an accepted standard of English?
There's something that we would call in the voice and speech world non-regional American dialect or general American. Whether or not someone actually speaks exactly in this dialect is questionable. Now, the standard speech that Professor McCarthy is talking about, the Brahmin accent, the educated dialect of New England, this was also taught as elocution. So students who went to Harvard were actually taking classes in pronunciation. They were taught how to speak. And actually, John F. Kennedy studied under a professor of public speaking at Harvard named Frederick Clifton Packard Jr., who also, by the way, was the teacher of Peter Gomes, who's the minister and professor at Harvard University.
It's a bit of upward mobility for President Kennedy getting those speech lessons when he was still Jack Kennedy. Well, moderating our live web chat today is Naomi Nagy, head of the Linguistics Department at the University of New Hampshire. Join the chat about accents, fraps, tonics, sneakers, dungarees, bubblers, and corner spas at our website, radioboston.org. Hollywood and television have a seemingly endless supply of so-called Boston accents. Consider the characters on Saturday Night Live's Sully and Denise skit about two Boston high schoolers.
What are you going to do when you graduate?
I'm going to be the first rapper to rap the national anthem at a Red Sox World Series game. No, Ma!
And in the movie The Departed, there's even mention of trying to change the accent.
You were kind of a double kid, I bet, right? Huh? One kid with your old man, one kid with your mother. You're upper middle class during the weeks, then you're dropping your eyes and you're hanging in the big bad Southie projects with your daddy the f***ing donkey on the weekends. I got that right? Yep. You have different accents? You did, didn't you, you little f***ing snake? You were like different people.
Those were actors Marky Mark Wahlberg and Leonardo DiCaprio in the movie The Departed. Now listen in to a real Bostonian with a real accent, Jack Haley of Dorchester, who plays the Tin Man in the 1939 classic The Wizard of Oz.
Go ahead, bang on it.
Beautiful. What a nickel.
It's empty. The tinsmith forgot to give me a heart.
No heart?
No heart.
No heart, but a real, living, breathing Boston accent for Tin Man Jack Haley. In Boston, we're the best in the country at doing the Boston accent, and one of the stars we sent to the big leagues is Billy West. He's the voice of the cartoon characters Ren and Stimpy, and he's been animated characters on shows like Family Guy. But as far as I'm concerned, he hit the Hall of Fame long ago here in Boston on WBCN and a radio show called The Big Mattress. He joined us this week from his home in Los Angeles with his character, Richie from Revere.
It's nice to be back in that town that I never thought I would get out of, right?
That's it. That's it. And as I recall, it was always Star Market, hanging out with guys and going there to buy the beer.
Get some beers. But it just reminded me of something. That when we used to go to Madison Square Garden, they wouldn't serve beer. Go watch a band play in there. It was very hard to get through some of those concerts without no beers. Oh, my God. I remember growing up in Boston. We first moved there in 1963. And, you know, I mean, the President of the United States was from Massachusetts. And there was a big focus on that accent. Everybody made fun of it, you know, because he would say Florida, yeah. Cuba, Florida. And, you know, everybody had a picnic with that. But the people in Massachusetts were like, what are they talking about?
How did you pick up on Revere? Was it somebody in particular that inspired the character of Richie?
I worked a lot of factory jobs. There was a guy I worked with once. I just thought he was perfectly charming because he had big plans, you know. I'm going to win the lottery, right? And, you know, I'm going to move out of Taunton. I'm being totally serious. You know, just stuff like that. Like he had delusions of grandeur, like he was a caliph or something.
And you have that Taunton, that swallowed. It's not the dropped R. It's that swallowed consonant, Taunton, New
Taunton.
Bedford. Could you tell the difference between the neighborhoods, between those accents?
I remember listening when I was in schools there, Louise Day Hicks.
She was the agitator over in South Boston against busing.
Yeah. Go with God, my children. March against the colored people. March! We don't want no busing. You know, it was just, Brian, Kevin, put down your Budweisers and march with your mother.
You got the accent, but why is it that so many actors in Hollywood, out in Los Angeles, where you're calling us from, why is it they get all the accents wrong?
Because they don't care enough about it.
Mm.
You know, they have dialogue coaches, but I don't think any one of them has ever been to Boston. They always get it wrong. And then they do cliche stuff like, what are you, retarded?
Mm.
You know, and stuff like that. But they don't understand that there was English involved here. I mean, like British. Like bathroom. I mean, if a Boston guy says, you know, what you do is you go over to the bathroom, right? And you wash your hands with soap, right? because there's a battle going on out here in this dirty, filthy world for microbial superiority. And you got to wash them hands. And, you know, that's one way of speaking. And then there's the other where some kids used to open their mouth and just let words drop out of it. You know, like, if you go over to Maffa, and I used to do a bit, you know, Sesame Street. Today's show is brought to you by the letter D. It was donated by the town of Medford because they don't use it anymore.
Well, if Helen of Troy launched 1,000 ships, Billy West launched 1,000 animated voices. Talking to us from Los Angeles, Billy West, Richie Revere. Thanks for joining us on Radio Boston.
Yo. Hey, everybody. How you doing? Is this on? I think it's on. Well, I don't care, okay, personally. But anyway, y'all listening to Radio Boston on WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. This is Richie Ridden, and I approve of this message, right?
The inimitable Billy West with his routine, Richie from Revere. And as Rebecca Magor was saying, coaching actors, it is the accentuation of those notes and his accentuation of what makes that accent so outrageous. Call us with your message at 1-800-423-TALK. Coming up, when we listened to the dropped R's at the New Hampshire border. This is Radio Boston. This is Radio Boston. I'm David Boweri. We're talking about how we talk. If you're looking for college credits, consider this the short course on the geophonology of Massachusetts. Treat us to the sound of you by calling us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. One established principle of linguistics is that dialects are like people. They move. Here with more on that is Radio Boston's Meghna Chakrabarty. Hello.
Hi, David. Listen to this.
This farm in particular was a general stock farm. We carried cattle, we carried sheep, and we carried ponies.
Now, you might think that sounds like an old Mainer, but it actually isn't a farmer from Maine. It's a man who was a farmhand in Devon, England. And linguists say that area strongly affected the Boston accent.
And you looked into whether the Boston accent is migrating.
That's right. And so I went up north to visit the University of New Hampshire at Durham.
Sonners. Observers.
This is UNH professor Naomi Nagy's linguistics class.
See that this one is a little bit louder, a little more musical, right? That's the one she's going to play on WBR.
Sure.
Okay, she's right. And it's no surprise, given that Nagy has spent a decade listening to New Englanders talk.
Right, there's one more velar, but words can't start with it. But it's featured on my T-shirt.
Linguistics is fun. That's what's featured on her green T-shirt. And just in case you're wondering, the velar is the ing in linguistics. But before we get too caught up in the linguistic particulars of the future of the Boston dialect, Nagy says we have to take a step back. Way back.
With the settlement of Massachusetts Bay Colony, right, we had a bunch of people who came from England, and they all arrived in eastern Massachusetts, and they settled there, and then very quickly they started moving west and north.
Up to New Hampshire, looking for farmland. They brought their sheep, their cattle, their old English place names, and their dropped R's with them.
And so originally, Massachusetts and New Hampshire would have had the same accent, because in terms of the English speakers, they all came from the same place.
So if we had, like, a Google map and we superimposed on that how people talk, you would get some kind of uniformity from Massachusetts up to northern New Hampshire.
Except for this pocket in southern New Hampshire, what I call the commuting zone, about an hour from Boston up 93 and up 95, that area sounds different.
And the difference is recent. In the late 1970s and early 80s, tens of thousands of citizens from the Commonwealth, like their colonial ancestors, pulled up stakes and moved here.
And it's a phenomenally large number. It's more than 10% of the population of New Hampshire.
They haven't exactly been welcome. Nagy says the mass migration up north produced a low-level cultural conflict that's evident even in her linguistics class. Half the students were born in New Hampshire, but to Bay State parents.
We have people who don't like Boston because it's a big city, and don't like the Bostonians that have come and started to make New Hampshire so crowded.
So what are they doing about it?
So they're subconsciously changing their accent. They're getting rid of some very Boston-specific features.
Nagy calls it live free or die as a linguistic principle.
Okay, so does that mean that the dialect that we're hearing now in southern New Hampshire is actually new?
Yes.
And to help understand how it's new, I meet a Boston transplant and his New Hampshire-raised daughter at a diner in Durham.
Yeah, my name's Joe Pinkston. We live in Pelham, New Hampshire, originally from Chelsea, Massachusetts.
His daughter is Brittany. She's 20. They moved up to New Hampshire when she was 7. Naomi Nagy says Brittany should sound less Boston than her father in 3 key ways.
One of them has to do with the fact that the word F-A-T-H-E-R and B-O-T-H-E-R, father and bother. If you get a good Bostonian in the word father, they have the ah that's the same as in pack the ca. But in bother, they have a ah sound, which is not like pack. A second one has to do with what I call the Mary, Mary, Mary merger.
As in, Mary had a little lamb, Merry Christmas, and will you marry me?
Which for some people are Mary, Mary, and Mary.
And the third difference? Take a guess.
My brothers and sisters, now all 5 of us, the whole family is in Pelham, New Hampshire.
And then the third way has to do with R dropping.
And the diner floor is littered with Joe's dropped R's, not Brittany's.
It's a whole different world. We didn't even have a car in Chelsea.
What was that?
We didn't even have a car.
In southern New Hampshire, the R strikes back.
It is still very important for people in this part of New Hampshire to distinguish themselves from Bostonians. And so as long as it's important for people to express their identity and show what group they're part of and how they're different from other people, there's always going to be these dialect differences.
The surprising thing, Naomi Nagy says, is that these differences have emerged in just one generation. And by holding an urban dialect at bay, southern New Hampshire may be unique, since in linguistics, town usually invades country.
So they're leaving a whole pile of dropped R's at the border.
Yes, at the border. When New Hampshire people reject that Bostonian feature, what they're doing is assimilating to many other parts of the country.
That's UNH linguistics professor Naomi Nagy talking about how the Boston accent is changing in southern New Hampshire right before our ears. Professor Nagy is moderating our live web chat today at radioboston.org. Listeners, what do you sound like? Do you know why you sound that way? Give us a call and let us listen as well at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or send us an email at radioboston@wbur.org. With me in the studio today, Rebecca Magoor, Director of Speech and Learning Program at Harvard University, and Linguistics Professor John McCarthy, joining us from the studios of WFCR in Amherst. Well, Professor McCarthy and Rebecca Magoor, what does what's happening in southern New Hampshire say about how language changes?
Well, I think what we're seeing in a situation like that is actually very typical, that how your attitude is absolutely centrally important to the way you talk and the way you change how you talk. So people who are very comfortable living in the Boston area will tend to talk more and more like that. If they aren't very comfortable with that area, with that accent, they will tend to change their speech. I see this among the students at the University of Massachusetts more and more. Every year I teach several hundred of them, most of them from the Boston area, and I'm getting fewer and fewer reports of students having typical Boston features. So very few students left who say Bath, and almost no other words with the broad ah. Nobody says tonic for soft drinks. Nobody says dungarees for jeans. A few things are hanging on, frap, carriage, for grocery carriage, and the R dropping is going, I think, too, with them.
What do you think, Rebecca?
Yes, I think that's true. In fact, I have interaction with undergraduates at Harvard, and one in particular who started off 2 years ago as a freshman dropping her R's and exhibiting the regular features, and you know, seeing her recently, you can just hear that shift, and I think a lot of that, in her case, is peer pressure. Mm-hmm. She wants to sound like the students around her.
Let's go to the lines again. We have a lot of callers here. Peter calling from Boston. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Well, one of my experiences was I used to do a lot of speaking
on disability civil rights. And so I travel around the country mm-hmm. and I'd have a sign language interpreter with me. And one day we were doing a skit, and someone asked me after the skit, how did I feel? And I said, I was scared. And the sign language interpreter that was there was from the South, and he signed, I was ? And fortunately, I had my own sign language interpreter with me, and he jumped in and signed, he was afraid.
Thanks, Peter. Peter calling from Boston. Thank you. Marilyn's calling from Newton.
Oh, hi. I just didn't expect to get on. I'm in the middle of washing the floor. Well, I called in because you asked about influences. I know that I grew up in Dorchester. I spent 19 mm-hmm. years of my life in Dorchester. The only time I've been out of the state has been to North Carolina for 11 years. And my influences were, one, my father, who spent his youth in New York. And you can hear that in the way I say New York. I do that a lot mm-hmm. in my speech. Many people have never taken me for a Bostonian. The second was where my teacher in Dorchester High School for Girls. And we had English teachers, and I swear to you, we spent hours sitting in class doing the WHs. We had to sit as a group and say, which, where, when, why.
That put you in good stead.
Or we did bath, puff, mm-hmm. fast, et cetera, so that, as I told your screener, by the time I finished high school, I was considered to be a snob. And the last thing I just wanted to bring up, one thing you haven't mentioned on the program, and maybe it's my generation of Bostonians or Dorchestonians, Dorchesteronians, mm-hmm. I don't know. But when I got to college, one of the things that was pointed out to those of us who came from that area was that we said, uh-oh. And I really had to work to change my speech. I was doing a glottal stop that I had grown up with. And that was part of the speech in Dorchester.
Mm. Marilyn, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to another Dorchestonian, I think you said. Barbara calling from Gloucester.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. From Dorchester. Whereabouts in Dorchester?
Fields Corner. No, sir. For real. I grew up in the three decks. Yeah, had my tonsils taken out at the canny. Yeah, Fields Corner, St. Ambrose Parish. Gad's country.
Well, where can you cash that in? Can you cash that in anywhere in the country?
I don't think so. But the thing is, I'm very proud to be from Dorchester. My family has their deep roots in there, where the Boston Gas Tank is located. That's where my great grandmother's house was. It's a city rich with history. I never consciously tried to drop my accent or anything like that.
Well, Barbara, good for you. That's like Alex Thoreau comfortable living within his own skin. Thanks for the call. And Professor McCarthy, you wanted to comment on that.
Oh, yes. I was going to comment about bottle or bottle. Mm. That's sometimes thought to be a feature of Irish and Boston.
That's right. Dorchester and South Boston.
Right. Another one is potato, for potato.
Or in Medford, it's potato. It's with a B, potato. Rebecca, Rebecca, you've noticed some of these today.
Well, what I would like to point out, and Professor McCarthy has mentioned this, is that there's a real difference in class here. So we had the first caller from Dorchester. She was speaking and asked. She was telling you about pronouncing the hua sound in white, for example. These are elocution lessons that she's talking about. And it is a Boston accent, the Brahmin accent or the Harvard accent, but it's completely different from the South Boston accent. And both of them are authentic American and Boston area accents that are totally different.
Mm. Well, in this last section of our college short course, we should ask in collegiate academic fashion, whither the accent? Where do you think this accent is going? Are we going to lose the Boston accent, Professor McCarthy?
Well, some people think that regional accents in the United States are doomed because of national media. Other people point out that there are ongoing changes that are actually accentuating differences between dialects. So, for example, there are vowel shifts going on in Detroit that are taking the word fun to fawn. Very different. In Massachusetts, I think what we'll see is that things that people are less aware of will continue. And so, for example, the thing was something I mentioned, which is COT and CAUGHT being pronounced alike in Massachusetts, but not in New York. They're pronounced differently, is something that no one seems to change in their speech because they're unaware of it. People are also unaware that that grocery carriages are called carts in other parts of the country. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to change that. Those things are going to be more robust because they're not being told what to do by the national media.
Rebecca McGuire.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment about dialects and whether or not there's this kind of fear, are they going to be fading out? I don't think that's going to be happening so soon. In my experience in collecting recordings of regional dialects, what you find is that the people that we want to get on recordings are people who really have stayed in the same neighborhoods, were born and raised in the same area. And in fact, what you discover is that most of the people in this country, in the world, they don't go traveling about to different continents during their lives. They stay in the same area, and they stay in the same neighborhood.
And so that becomes, in ecological terms, those places become islands. Let's go to Harry, calling from AIR. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I once listened to a routine that Bill Cosby was doing in the city of Philadelphia, in which he was making fun of the Philadelphia accent, you know, saying that when he went to Philly, his name became Bill instead of Bill. And he did the whole routine, and hardly anyone laughed. In fact, most people shifted uncomfortably.
Mm.
It's always been a theory of mine that certain parts of the country are really proud of their accents and are in your face with them, and other parts are not. And the two places I think that where people really are much more likely to be proud of their accent and actually mimic it and do it intentionally and broaden it for purposes of emphasis are Texas and Boston.
That's interesting, Harry. Thanks for the call. Do you agree with Harry? Rebecca?
No, I think there's a great local pride here in Boston, and I think that's wonderful. And certainly, again, it also has to do with the very strong identity that people have with their neighborhood. So my friend John Shea, who's a wonderful playwright who grew up in Somerville, which he says is the greatest city in the world, you know, he's very proud of where he comes from and very proud of the way that people express themselves in his neighborhood.
Mm. Professor McCarthy, what do you think? Can pop culture and national media just wash it all over?
It's not going to knock all of it out. Rebecca's right that a lot of people stay in their area and they're not looking outside, they're not looking to get employment outside, and they're pretty happy where they are. So the national media is not going to have a big effect on them. The dialects remain largely impervious to these outside influences.
So we go forward bravely into a new world, and you think that that world is going to make people feel more comfortable with that accent against those claims that they're uneducated?
I think so, and I think you can see that in the shift in the way that voice and speech is taught, at least in the theater world, in the acting conservatories. It used to be that with famous teachers of voice and speech like Edith Skinner, you would supposedly have to, quote-unquote, correct your dialect or your accent. Mm. And today, we don't teach that as much in acting conservatory. Mm. What we do is we make people aware of how they speak and to be proud of it, but then we give them the skills to be able to speak in many different dialects.
Mm. Rebecca McGuire, research fellow, director of the Speech and Learning Program at Harvard University. Thanks so much for being with us today. And UMass Amherst linguistics professor John McCarthy of Medford, who joined us from the studios of WFCR in Amherst. Thanks so much as well for joining us.
You're welcome.
And listeners, thanks so much for joining the Radio Boston conversation today. This was a lot of fun. How many accents could someone really have? I often wonder because I left home with a Boston accent, was derided like Alex Theroux was for having one letter short of 26 in my vocabulary, and then invented the R I wasn't born with. In a sense, I knew which side my bread was going to be buttered on. I went with the R's. But the truth is that having returned home for 25 years now, I can still hear myself occasionally slipping into butter and corn and lobster omelets. I'm eating well, but Rebecca, can I hide my accent?
Well, I think the question is, do you want to? That's the really big question. And certainly you can get used to speaking in a certain way, and that becomes your habit.
Mm.
So in effect, you can say what people often say is losing their accent.
I have to live with the inner non-R in me and be comfortable with it. Well, Cassius said it in Julius Caesar, how many ages hence shall this lofty scene be acted over? In states unborn and accents yet unknown. You've been listening to Radio Boston. Our show is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty and Claudina Bade. Our technical director is Tim Skog. Our senior producer is Deb Becker. Next week, Barack and Duvall. Only one name needed. The rock star charisma, the similar messages and backgrounds. What do they represent about politics? I'm David Boeri. Enjoy the weekend and your accent, whatever it is, and join us again next week for Radio Boston.